Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios here in Cumming, Georgia, it's time for Stewarding Family Wealth. And now, here's your host.
Good afternoon, folks. This is Randy Brunson with Centurion Advisory Group, your host for this episode of Stewarding Family Wealth. In the studio today with me, in addition to the most wonderful engineer, Miss Amanda Pierce, is my good friend Joel Thain of Integracom. And Joel, welcome. Glad you're here.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Randy.
Good. We are going to do a couple of episodes this afternoon, just visiting with Joel about everything from family to business, what he's learned over the, over the years of his life. I'll just start, Joel. We were talking before we got on the air here, but you grew up in South Georgia, right?
That's correct, yes.
In Tatnall County.
Yes, I was born in Metair, Georgia, but that was the closest hospital to Reidsville, Georgia, where I was raised, yes.
Yeah, I had a similar experience in Oklahoma. The family lived here, but I was born 20 miles away where the hospital was, right? So for those that may not be familiar with Southeast Georgia, place Tatnall County for us compared to Savannah or Atlanta or Jacksonville or places like that.
It's about an hour west or inland from Savannah.
Okay.
It's about 30 minutes from Vidalia. Most people have heard of Vidalia Onion. So there's several counties in that part of Georgia that can legally call the onions they grow there Vidalia Onions, and Tatnall County is one of those. So I grew up in onion country.
That's right. That area is famous for the Vidalia Onion. Totally off the subject and was not on my list of questions, but what is it? I'm just curious. What is it that makes the Vidalia Onion the Vidalia onion? It's known for being sweet, but what is it?
Well, it's my understanding that, and it is a sweeter onion, and it's my understanding it has to do with the sandy soil in that area. I'm not an expert on it, but that's what I've been told, that it's the soil that makes it that way.
Because that part of South Georgia, in fact, topography, if you will, from coastal Virginia all the way to coastal Texas is sort of that swampy forest, right? Where you have all the soft woods like the pines, the loblolly pines, slash pines, things like this, low country.
Yes.
Lots of sand and...
Yeah, there's a lot. There is the lowlands, the swamp, as you call it. And there's a lot of those what we call sand hills, or that, you know, where there's a lot of scrub oaks, and but definitely the pine trees as well. Yeah. But yeah, something about that soil there and it being sandy,
right,
makes the onion sweeter for whatever reason. But yes,
cool. That's good to know. You were talking about your you mentioned Thain 5 and 10.
Yes,
your grandfather, and we were talking about the Thain family. So that's a Scottish name.
Thain is a Scottish name, correct?
Yeah.
Scottish clan.
Yeah. And the, did you say Aberdeen was?
I believe that's where my ancestors were from. I mean, they came over to this land before it was the United States. It was a long time ago. So it's kind of hard to know all the details. And probably some other members of my family would be more accurate about it. But it's my understanding that most of the Thains came from the Aberdeen area of Scotland, which is on the coast. And so they were whalers. They were of the sea.
Yes. So take the big... What they use those spears? I'm thinking of Moby Dick here, but who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah, they ended up in the Carolinas on the coastal, you know,
eventually. Atlantic coast. Yeah, I believe they came into either Canada or the kind of New England area in the beginning, and then later they made their way down and was in Carolina and then Georgia after a few more years. So, and they're all over, but that's my strength. The line I came from ended up in Georgia. So
yeah, I'm intrigued by all of that. My dad and his brother did a lot of family research on both the Brunson and the Adams side. My mother's family name was Adams, but did a lot of research on the Brunson side, and I've inherited all that. Both my dad and my uncle are gone, and I've inherited all the files, literally just file folders, boxes full of file folders that have a lot of family history. So, and I've been cleaning out those folders, those files. So I'm just curious about that kind of thing. But your grandfather started, you said, a 5 and dime.
Yeah, my grandfather started Thain's 5 and 10 in Metair, Georgia. I really don't know what year it would have been, but it had to have been in the, I'm guessing, 50s. I'm really not sure.
Sure.
By the 60s, because my father started one in Reidsville, and that would have been probably 19, actually, that would probably have been the really early 1960s. So.
Yeah.
And then my uncle later started one in Glenville, Georgia. So these are two cities in Tatnall County, Metair and Candler County. And then both my father and my uncle opened a second one as well. So at one time there was five of these stores. Yeah.
Cool. And that was, I'm guessing that was probably your first experience with business, sort of growing up in that environment with your dad owning a business and some of those kind of things.
Yes, that is correct. So as a child, you know, I worked at the store and even as a teenager. And so, yeah, I grew up in that environment of being self-employed. And ironically enough, I came out of that saying I would never own my own business, right?
Okay.
And then look at me now. So anyway, but yeah, that's kind of that experience. You know, I just remember the long hours sometimes coming home from church on Sunday and stopping to do book work. And I have two brothers and we're bored to death. And so I didn't like it at that point, you know, but yeah, but I did grow up in that environment and my dad, you know, was a very hard worker, enterprising. And later when that business wasn't as good, you know, my dad was a jack of all trades. He could do all kinds of things. So he's a master electrician, ended up doing that later in life as well. So yeah, he taught us how to work hard for sure.
Yeah. I've heard that story before. You know, you learn so many things. That's interesting that you say, though, after watching that, it's like, okay, I'm not going to own my own business. So as you're finishing high school and some of those kind of things, what was the plan or what direction were you headed or what did you want to do? Or
yeah, so my dad was an electrician, so that was that influence, and he was starting to get into electronics a little bit, also studying it on his own, and he was always looking to learn something new. And you know, of course, the sore business had kind of died away, so he had to kind of start making transitions and stuff. And then the construction industry is sometimes not the best as well. So he was studying electronics, and I got interested. But actually, my older brother first did, and so it's kind of fell into that mode, you know, and went to school and got a degree in electronics. And so that's kind of how I got into technology. And I guess the other angle on this related to what we're talking about earlier is that, you know, my growing up, I think about my grandparents in particular, they grew up in the Depression, right? And they often, for whatever reason, their mindset was you need to get a good job with a really big company with really good benefits and then you're set. You know, that was their mindset back then, right?
Right.
And it was true at one time, I'm sure. And it can be true in pockets today, I suppose. But most people don't work 30 or 40 years for the same company anymore, right?
Right.
But that was the kind of the mindset too, I guess, around getting a good education, getting a good degree in something that could be used and go to get a job for a company and work there. And they'll have good benefits. They'll take care of you and all this kind of stuff. So that's kind of where I was kind of conditioned in some reason, you know. And then I guess the influence of my father and the business and my mom actually ran the business a lot too. And how, you know, just kind of watching that, I wasn't so sure that's what I wanted to do. And I never got into retail. I think that was, I probably was not the cut out for that. But it turns out I did like owning my own business. And yeah. I liked, you know, kind of being in control of some of those things and kind of navigating my destination and stuff. I enjoy it. So.
Yeah. Nice. The you're right, though. If you look across the decades, those that were born in the 20s that may have been World War II veterans or the ones that were born in the 30s, your parents, my parents, those kinds of things. Yes, the focus was on the education, the job, the 30, 40-year career. And I suppose if you were a 22-year-old coming back from overseas, from Pacific or somewhere after the war, if you could lock in somewhere, go to work for what in Michigan used to be called Generous Motors, you know, GM or IBM or something of that nature from 48 and do your 30 or 35 years until the early 80s. Yeah, that was a good run, you know?
Yes.
How many companies, goodness gracious, so many companies, many of which are gone now, but Kodak or so many that, that was a good run. The world's changed since then.
It has.
It really has. So you moved to North Georgia, up to the Metro Atlanta area.
So I got a degree in electronics in South Georgia, and I worked a year in a town called Statesboro, which is actually where Georgia Southern is. It's a bigger city. Most people probably just heard of Statesboro. Then I moved up to Atlanta in 1988.
Yeah.
And again, still in electronics, I came to work for Oglethorpe Power.
Okay.
Out of Tucker, Georgia. Mm-hmm. They're owned by all the electric co-ops or most of the electric co-ops in the state of Georgia. And they were formed by them, but really it's kind of like consumer-owned co-op structure. And so I worked there for 18 and a half years in technology. So I started out working in electronics, which a specific utility-type technology called SCADA.
Okay.
It stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. So I worked in that for, roughly a third of the time there. And then I moved into energy metering, so the electronics and the meters that read measure electricity.
Yeah.
And then I moved later into telecommunications, working with voice and data communications. That was kind of the three main areas I worked in there for the 18 and a half years. So that was in Oglethorpe Power. It did kind of change names, or they split out in three companies, but you know, I ended up ultimately working for a company called Georgia System Operations at the end there.
Okay. Neat. And of course, in there somewhere, you met a lady named Karen.
I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that seems to have worked out okay.
Yes, it has. We just celebrated our 31st wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Just a few days ago. So I met Karen at a church convention, and we dated for about 2.5 years and got married. And she's a very wonderful person, a completer of me for sure. You know, we have 3 kids and wonderful children. We just enjoy life as a family and have a lot of good times together. She homeschooled our children. You know, I say her because she did most of it and, all the way through. And so it was a great, I think it's a great, you know, environment for my children to grow up in. And we were able to do a lot together as a family. We would travel together as part of school, but part of traveling and learning other cultures around the world. And we would do that when everybody else was in school, right? So we would go when it wasn't crowded. And so I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's wonderful. So.
Yeah, now I've heard you talk about that. So as your family came along on you and so on and so forth, and you were going through that decision making process about education, was there lots of discussion about it, or was Karen sort of clear early on that she really wanted to do this? Or
homeschooling you're talking about?
Yes, homeschooling. Yeah. Yes,
it was not extremely intentional in the beginning. So I guess it was in some sense. So Karen decided that, you know, she wasn't ready for our oldest, Anya, our daughter, to be sent off to some kindergarten school somewhere.
Right.
At age 5, she said, I'm just going to homeschool her for a year and maybe I'll be ready then, right? So she homeschooled Anya for the first year. And then when it come time for her to go into first grade, our third child was born. We have 2 boys, Anya, Calvin, and Basil. So Basil was born. And she's like, well, I don't really want to drag this baby out of the house and take Anya to a school. We're like looking at a Montessori school or something like that.
Right.
So he said, well, I'm going to homeschool again. So I homeschool first grade for Anya. Well, by the end of that second year of homeschooling, she's like, no, this is for us. I'm going to do this the rest of the way. And so we did. She did all the way through. So all 3 kids, kindergarten through 12th grade. And she did a wonderful job. And, you know, it's one of those things that a lot of people feel like I can't do that. I can't teach this. Well, you can. It really is amazing what you can do. And it doesn't, you know, you can get more done in 2 or 3 hours than you can a full day of school if you're in public school. It's just a much more efficient, effective way to teach. And then there are other, our kids were sent to other places, like for a little class here, a little class there, or be part of this organization to learn this. So they got a well-rounded education, not just from Karen, but Karen was the main teacher and put it all together, and they were truly homeschooled with, you know, supplementing stuff here and there, which worked out really, really well.
So you found environments. If there was specific subject matter you wanted them to learn, then there were groups, organizations, homeschool associations, things like this that you could correct. Connect with, and someone has some specialty and probably Karen could probably teach a language class or some specific languages, or if maybe you did a high school class on, I don't know, technology or electronics or that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, and especially here in the Atlanta area, the homeschool community is very well organized, and there's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I tell you another thing you often hear about people, you know, homeschooling, they're concerned about socialization, but it actually is, you know, probably an advantage socially to homeschool, you know, because of there's a lot of opportunity to socialize with other kids, but also just to socialize with adults, which is also important, right?
Right.
And so, our kids would, you know, like be in a speech and debate class with this lady who homeschooled her own children, and she has a master's degree and whatever, and she could teach that, and her kids go over there for an hour or two to learn that on a Thursday, say, of the week or something like that. I know Anya was in some kind of a arts program as well called Master's Academy, I think that's what they call it at the time, which, you know, she got all kinds of additional training there around debate or whatever. And so, it worked out really well.
Yeah.
They got a really good education, I think. And it just, more importantly, is just that it was just a good experience as a family, growing together and learning together. And, you know, we would just have fun, even ourselves, you know, traveling around different places and learning about how people in other parts of the world live, other languages, even traveling around the United States. There's so many beautiful places here in the United States that we could go together as a family and just enjoy our time together there. So not that other people can't do that, but it was for us, it was nice because by then I had most of those years of my children being kind of that early teenage years. You know, I was not working at the power company anymore. I had my own business. And so I could work from wherever as I needed to and had a great team in place to take care of things at the office. And so, you know, we could travel around and not really have to get back for some particular reason and travel when everybody else was not traveling. So things were not crowded. So it was great. Yeah, it was awesome.
It did work out because, you know, I was going to ask, and you've addressed it some, but we have the opportunity to serve at our office a number of families who've homeschooled their children. You know, I think you've met a couple of the guys, but then there's others that are, and some of the other young couples, I would say in their 20s or early 30s, and their children are, some are still in diapers, or 4, 6, 8, 10. So, you know, and you're 3 year young adults now, they're grown. But I've heard this consistently, the ability to travel, to see, to learn, you know, learn by being there, learn by traveling, so on and so forth. So are there 2-3 things you feel like that Anya and Calvin and Basil learn, because you've traveled both domestically and internationally. I mean, are there 2-3 things that really stand out to you? Here's a real benefit of learning by traveling and learning through that experience.
Yeah, I think for most people, I think it's hard to travel very far and for an extended period of times. Yeah. We did have one other advantage in that my wife's mother was born in the country of Hungary and was expelled after the war, because they were on the Hungarian border, which is kind of the German-speaking area, and they had German name, and they got kicked out, and fortunately ended up in Germany, not in Siberia somewhere. Yeah. So my wife has family in Europe, and so that was an additional experience to go, not only to visit a foreign country, but to actually be in the homes with the people that live there. And that's just to see how other people live, try to get used to their language and learn something about it. Like our kids all did learn a little bit of German, because of my wife's family. And so that, I think just, I think if getting out and experiencing other places in the world is just a good experience for a lot of different reasons. But one is just to recognize how great the United States is. Sometimes you don't know how great it is until you have something to compare it to, right? Not that it's not great in these other places necessarily, but there is a difference. It's a different mindset. Like in the United States, there's, it maybe has been tarnished some, but there's a sort of independent mindset, you can be what you want to be, you can do these things. And a lot of times in some of these other countries, their mindsets are a little more, just kind of got a little box around it. They don't think outside of that box because of this kind of the way that things are structured. So that's a good experience, I think, for any young person to go out and see. And then there are countries that are in poverty or whatever, right? If you can experience that as well, and it's not as pleasant, but you see how it can be, right?
Right.
Helps you appreciate what you have. So,
yeah, that's a good point. You're right. The and what's intriguing, because of Karen's family, you were able to stay in homes rather than in just the whatever the hotel chain is that happened to have a property in that city. And yeah, that's a very different experience. I someone told us our daughter was out of the country twice before she was 20, once when she was 16, and then when she was 19, the entire summer she spent in the Philippines doing some volunteer work. And someone told us in that time that the absolute best thing that you can do for your children is to get them outside of the country to somewhere else in the world while they are still teenagers, before they're 20, before they're in college, while they're, sort of like that, And I remember still, I have a young cousin. She was born in the early 70s, and she went to Asbury College in Kentucky. And when she was in college, this would have been early 90s, okay? It was about the time the Soviet Union came apart. You remember Reagan telling Gorbachev, tear down this wall, that thing. It's doing all that stuff from 30-plus years ago. And so this young lady's name is Amy. And so and this was all happening about the time that she was there. So she was part of a mission trip to Russia in about 91 or 92. Okay, she's 20, she's beautiful, she's blonde, she's just, this well-raised young lady, okay? A couple of years later, she and some of the other cousins came to our house for the Olympics in 96, mm-hmm. right? So this is a relatively new experience for Amy. It's still on her mind. And I remember her telling us that she would never again complain about running out of hot water at home. Because sometimes if everybody's taking a shower at once or right back to back to each other, and if, the water heater can get taxed and you run out of hot water, she said she would never complain about running out of hot water again, because apparently that at that time, wherever they were staying there in Russia, the you could be in the middle of a shower and the water would just go off.
Yeah.
Or it would be dirty water, or just and that's just one element. You know, just all these random experiences, all these things that we expect, just our expectations are here about the way our world works, and then you go somewhere else and it doesn't work like
that's
that.
That's right.
You know, that kind of thing. And so I'll always remember that. And then, of course, Teresa and I have traveled some outside the country. You know, Western Europe in particular, the British Isles, that's a very comfortable place to travel to. You know, you don't have to go very far east in Europe or other parts of the world to run into some very different types of expectations of people. Like you said, the way their culture works, they limit themselves, or they don't see opportunity, or they deal with all these random things that you and I take for granted that always work or whatever.
You know? Yeah, but what's interesting now too, and if you could take a look at some of the Central European countries or the Eastern European countries and go visit there, you know, these are people that were under communist rule not that many years ago, but they also are the same countries that have not been under Western rule. And so what I mean by that is, like in the West, you know, we've gotten comfortable, we've got fat and happy and a little bit complacent, but those, you know, some of those countries there now, you see they're being very enterprising, very, their laws are very business oriented and, you know, growth oriented. And so it's kind of exciting to watch those parts of the world. And it's a difficult place, of course, in Europe, you know, with, maybe they don't have like the natural resources and the wonderful things we have like in the United States, and it's harder, but, I do like to see the spirit of those people for sure.
So here's a question for you as it relates to homeschooling. If you had advice for young parents that are considering homeschooling, because the last couple of years have been just a fascinating experience for most people. And for those that have had their children in public school, they've had the opportunity to recreate their life and to do some different things and try to figure a lot of these things out. And so some of them have probably, or they have actually said, you know what, we're going to homeschool. So whether it's someone that's been through this experience the last couple of years with public school, or that has little ones and they're considering homeschooling, are there two or three things or two or three pieces of advice that you could give to these folks about how to think about homeschooling or where to start or how to approach it or anything?
Well, I guess the number one thing I would say is believe in yourself as a parent that you can do this.
Okay.
I think it's important that both the husband and the wife are behind it. And specifically, it's often the mother who wants to homeschool. So it's very important that the husband is in harmony with her and stands behind her in doing that, because he can cut her legs out from under her very quickly if he's not. So that's the first thing. And the second thing I would say is, don't forget that as humans, we naturally are wanting to learn. There's something in us that we're wanting to learn, right? We're always wanting to learn. And so don't put out that fire with your children. And sometimes that's what happens in organized school, because you're trying to make all 30 students fit in a certain mold or whatever. But really, if you can homeschool your children and you can ride the wave that they're on, if they're like incredibly interested in airplanes right now, then you can start teaching them all about airplanes and aerodynamics and lift and whatever, and just ride that wave. So that's important, just to do that. The third thing I would say is read to your children. There's a lot of value in reading when a child's young, before they can read. I know Carrie and Rich are kids all the time. And so reading is so important, and all those things just makes a wonderful result at the end, you know. And don't be concerned about, am my kids going to have time with other kids? What about their social skills? Because social skills are developed primarily with dealing with adults. And so, and you can just look at examples out there, and I think you can see that's proven, you know, but there are so many opportunities for young, and the children do need to get together. I'm not saying they shouldn't or anything like that, but especially here in the Atlanta area, with all the organization around homeschooling, all the opportunities, that socialization is not a problem at all. So those are, yeah, it's a wonderful thing. Now, I understand maybe everybody feels like they can't do it, but I would almost argue that they can, right? You know,
right. So. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I like that. That's very well said. And those of you listening to this podcast, you already know this, but in the event that somebody's listening that does not, I'll reemphasize what Joel said. Please, please, please read to your children. Restructure your life, whatever you have to do, restructure your life so that in the evenings you can be with your children and incorporate as part of their evening routine reading to them, you know. And we had, I don't remember the names of all the books, but you know, that your kids probably like ours, they had five or six go-to books that they wanted to read every night, you know. And one of them that we had at the house is the title of it's But No Elephants, right? Okay. And it's funny, it's a cute little story, right? And so I don't know how many thousands of times I've read that book, right? You know, you almost memorize it, you know what's coming next, the whole deal. But it's a lot of fun to read to the kids. And so here's what's so cool. So our son's, well, I don't know, 41, I suppose. And so he's got a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old. Yeah, I should know this like for memory and all that. But anyway, yeah, 10 and 7. So what our son wanted for Christmas here a few years ago, copies of these four or five books that he had when he was old, so he could read them to his children. So it's really good. But you and I have both, we've both witnessed that, the reading to them, that's time with them. It teaches them how to think. It teaches them how to read. It teaches them how to spell. It increases their comprehension, their mental acuity, everything. I could go on. I'm a reader. Okay, yeah. Always have, and you are as well, I know. Yeah. And so it just expands the way your brain works, and it's sort of like music, okay? And I won't go on and on about music, but I feel the same way about music. There's something that happens when you expose yourself to music or even learn, whether it's singing or you learn an instrument, whether it's vocal or instrumental or whatever. You know, learning an instrument, using your voice, it helped me out. It engages different parts of your brain in ways that are positive in terms of your overall mental and emotional health.
Yes, I don't know a lot about it, but I have seen some interesting material around what music does to the brain and tests they've done with rats or whatever. It's pretty amazing, but yeah.
Yes. Anyhow. Yes, Reed. That's a good point. All right. I want to ask you about. I want to switch subjects, though, because you were talking early on that you came up here 35 years ago, went to work for Oglethorpe Power, you know, after getting your education and electronics. And then there was a point at which you decided to start Integracom. Mm-hmm. Okay. I would love to learn more about that, sort of how you decided to start a business and what the experience was like and so on and so forth. But let's get into that in the second episode. So folks, this is Randy Brunson with Centurion Advisory Group on the podcast Stewarding Family Wealth. Here you can, our firm, by the way, is an independent wealth management firm. We work with families who own businesses, helping them make great decisions at the intersection of life, business, and money. And you can learn more at our website. But in the second episode, I want to talk to Joel more about this whole transition from employee to business owner and what the experience has been like. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with you.